Welcome to IndieCider, where we go beyond the game and meet the developers behind today's indie hits.
Hello and welcome to the IndieCider podcast, where I play indie games and then interview the developer. My name is Ken Gagne, your host, and this week I'm playing The Warlock of Firetop Mountain, published for Steam by Tin Man Games. Tin Man Games is the developer and publisher of numerous game books, which are similar to Choose Your Own Adventure games. You may remember them from a previous episode of IndieCider, where I interviewed them about To Be or Not To Be, a Choose Your Own Adventure game based on Ryan North's book based on Hamlet. The Warlock of Firetop Mountain was funded on Kickstarter and is based on a 1980s game book by Ian Livingstone and Steve Jackson, called, of course, The Warlock of Firetop Mountain. This is not the first computer adaptation of this game. It was previously released in the 80s for the ZX Spectrum computer, and more recently for the PlayStation 3. However, this adaptation of The Warlock of Firetop Mountain uses an entirely new game engine that is unique even to Tin Man Games. They have never used it before. It was developed via the funding they received from Kickstarter. In this game, you choose one of several pre-generated fantasy characters from warlocks and warriors and barbarians and thieves to explore Firetop Mountain. It looks very much like a tabletop game in the sense that your character is a little figurine who hops from one spot to the next. When you come to a branch in the path or some sort of decision that needs to be made, a menu appears and you choose what you want to do. Do you want to go left or right at the fork in the road? Do you want to try stealing the box or not? Once you make the decision, you are committed to it, and you can't go back in your path. The game is constantly moving you forward. You don't get any freedom of action other than what the menus allow you to do. So it very much is a choose-your-own-adventure game, even if it doesn't look like one. Some of the decisions you make do rely on chance. For example, if you're going to sneak past some goblins, you might need to roll the dice against your skill attribute, your value which varies based on which character you chose. If you succeed, then you sneak past them. If not, then they will spot you and you may need to enter into combat, at which point it switches to a top-down grid-based tactical combat maneuver similar to Final Fantasy Tactics or Vandal Hearts. This game is surprisingly deep and surprisingly fun. The character you choose is so much more than just numbers. They have different skills. For example, one person might be educated and be able to read different languages, which comes in handy in the dungeon. And they also have backstories. You might actually meet characters in the dungeon who know you from your previous adventures. The combat system at first frustrated me because I couldn't predict what the enemies were going to do and I constantly was dying. But then I realized that there are patterns to them and you just have to learn what they are. For example, snakes can only attack diagonally. So as long as you're standing right in front of the snake, you can attack it without it attacking you. Doesn't necessarily make it predictable, but it does make it easier to ascertain their movements and thus escape unscathed. I also got frustrated with how easily I would die and would have to start the whole game over, going through motions and decisions I'd already made just to get back to where I was. But the game does give you 3 resurrection stones, and I thought this was 3 total, but it's 3 every time you start the game over. So basically infinite, just 3 per session. And those allow you to go back to the last bench you sat at. And the bench is similar to the stool in Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, where if you sit down, you regain some health. Not necessarily all, but some. Just enough to help you get to the next checkpoint, one hopes. If you die, then use one of those 3 stones and you get sent back. As you defeat enemies, you also gain souls and gold. Haven't quite figured out what the gold is for, but the souls, I believe, can be used to redeem more playable characters for you to choose from. And the game will feature DLC with more characters you can buy. I really like dungeon crawlers. I grew up playing Final Fantasy Dragon Warrior and especially Dungeons & Dragons. And this game not only has that cool retro vibe and plot to it, but it's just a really pretty game and the plot seems pretty well thought out and diverse with a lot of high replay value, and so I was surprised by how long I found myself playing and enjoying this game. I'd like to think I would have bought this game even if the developer had not given me a review code. If you want to see the game being played, check it out at indiecider.net/49 for episode number 49, where you can also subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, TuneIn, Google Play, or follow me on Twitter at GameBits, where you can leave comments about this episode or recommend future games for me to play. And with that, let's get on with this week's interview to learn more about The Warlock of Firetop Mountain. Joining me today on the podcast is Neil Renison, founder and creative director of Tin Man Games. Hello, Neil.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Yes, good. I've got coffee in my stomach.
That's right, because as we're speaking, it's evening Thursday for me, morning Friday for you.
It is. It's, nice and early-ish.
And also joining us is Mr. Ed Blanche, technical artist at Tin Man Games. Hello, Ed.
Hello.
Are you also a coffee fiend?
Caffeine fiend, certainly.
Yes, caffeine of the fizzy soda variety.
Ah, I see how it is. Very good.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of bitter.
So at the time of this recording, it's a very interesting intersection. Yesterday, your game came out, and tomorrow, at least as far as my timetable goes, it is the first day of PAX West, and you two are stuck talking to me.
Yeah. We're here in the office doing work, and then we have two other staff members who've flown over to Seattle who are probably at this very moment setting up the booth ready for the influx of crowds tomorrow.
And one of those individuals would be Mr. Ben Cosmina, who's been on this show before to talk about one of your other games, To Be or Not To Be.
Yes, Ben will be there, hawking our wares, doing a splendid job, I'm sure.
And you're stuck at home in Melbourne, Australia.
We're here fighting the fires, fixing the bugs, and replying to all the press emails and all the forum posts and all the interesting stuff. Yeah.
Fun. So, The Warlock of Firetop Mountain is your latest game, but you are a company that has published dozens of games before, most of them existing in the genre of game book. For our listeners who aren't familiar with that, what exactly is a game book?
So, a game book essentially is it's a thing from probably around the 1980s. You had the Choose Your Own Adventure series, which I know were really popular in the States. And off of the Choose Your Own Adventure series, another sort of genre evolved, which is this game book. And a game book is essentially that the choice-based narrative of those books, but with a game level added in, such that you create a character to take through the story. Usually you have to roll up that character in the same way that you create a character in Dungeons and Dragons. So you'd have stats, and you'd roll dice to create those stats. And then as you go through the story, as well as making choices in the story, you would meet creatures and monsters, and you'd have to fight them using dice, usually, to get past them. So,
for somebody who went into this game completely blind, like I did at first, The Warlock of Firetop Mountain seems like a classic dungeon crawler, like you would find in early Dungeons & Dragons books like Keep on the Borderlands or The Isle of Dread. But it turns out it actually has quite the lineage. It is an adaptation of a 34-year-old game book. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this is the game book that started, I guess, the whole thing, especially in the UK and Europe. The Wall of Firetop Mountain, it sold millions of copies. It was you know, for 1982, I think it came out. It was huge in the school playgrounds, and you know, it was a bit of a seminal moment because Ian Livingstone and Steve Jackson, who obviously created it, they were the guys that started Games Workshop, and they were the guys that flew over to the States and first met Gary Gygax and signed the first European distribution deal for Dungeons & Dragons. So, you know, it's all these people were creating all this stuff around this time, sort of late 70s, early 80s. And so The Warlock is a really huge deal, and we're really, really proud to have been working.
So how much leeway did you have in adapting such a storied and seminal work? Were you able to be creative and inject some original content, or were you bound to stick to the script?
It's very difficult when you come across something like this because, people recognize it for what it is, which is this lovely thing from their childhoods. And so what we have to do is we kind of have to take that, and we kind of have to say, look, 34 years have passed now. What can we do with this to try and slot it into, a new generation of game player, while keeping those kind of nostalgic ties to the past for the older gamer? So we did make some changes. We've added some new things. One of the key things we did was we removed the fact that the tagline for the series was "You are the hero." And while you're still the hero, you're actually controlling a different hero this time. You actually get to choose your own heroes with their own backgrounds to take into account. So it's kind of like a pre-rolled D&D character that you're taking into the adventure, rather than rolling up your own character to start with.
So that way there are multiple storylines that may not have been present in the original book?
Exactly. One of the negatives of the old game book system is that replayability was never great. Once you played through the books a few times, you were done and you'd move on to the next book. So one of the ways we tried to combat that is by doing exactly that, by, you know, if you're taking a different character, a different hero into the mountain, you are going to have a slightly different experience than if you took another character in there, which, you know, that's not just narratively. So obviously the story changes, their quests change, but also, you know, their combat options change. They have different attack patterns and they can do different things and deal with situations in different ways.
Part of this book's story lineage includes previous adaptations as computer games, one of which was for the computer you grew up with, the ZX Spectrum. Did you grow up playing this game?
I actually did play this game. Yeah, I actually had it on my Speccy 48K, as we used to call it back then. It was one of a bunch of games that I used to, adventure games I used to play. Happy days. I do miss that little computer with rubber keys.
It must be very strange to be making a modern version of a game you played as a kid.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It is sometimes you have to pinch yourself, and I do have to remind myself sometimes that I'm dabbling with things that as a kid I could never have dreamed of dabbling in. You know, I get to work with my heroes basically, which is, you know, really quite nice. So yeah, it's rather special.
Now, the ZX isn't the only adaptation of this game. More recently, it came out for the PlayStation 3. Isn't it? I mean, the PlayStation 3 was not that long ago. Isn't it a bit soon to be remaking such a recent game?
Yes and no. Look, when we you'll know that we've already done some adaptations of the Fighting Fantasy series ourselves for iOS and Android, and we also did some on desktop computers too. And if you look at what we've done, we actually chose a lot of the later books in the series to adapt, just because we wanted to kind of give a little bit of distance between what we were going to do and, you know, other releases. Because it wasn't just the PlayStation. There was another iOS version done by a company called Big Blue Bubble. And we felt that, you know, a few years had passed and we could probably give it a shot now. And also, those adaptations were a lot closer to the original source material, and they played a lot more like the original paperback books. And we knew that what we were going to create was something far different than that. And we were, you know, the visuals, the way it was going to be sort of laid out, the redesign. So we felt that with the bit of time that had elapsed and the amount of changes we were making to the original design of the game, that it was enough for us to be doing it.
And speaking of the visuals, let's turn it over to your partner in crime, Mr. Ed Blanche, for a moment. Hi, Ed.
Hello.
So this game, The Warlock of Firetop Mountain, went on Kickstarter because it's not like any other game book that Tin Man Games has done before. It basically has a whole new engine. Is that correct?
Yeah. Basically, Tin Man sat down and we reworked the... We have sort of two components that go into the structure of it, one of which is the writing component, which is the program that the writers use in order to put together the classic kind of game book format. And then we had to create a engine that would allow us to hook that into something that was obviously the visuals that you see in the game. Whereas the previous titles were much more page oriented, so there was no physical location that matched to an actual page of text. So we had to keep a figurine synchronized with where you were in the game, essentially. So, in that respect, we did have to basically build a whole new engine to fit it.
And what impact does this new level of visual detail that you've brought to your game engine, what impact does that have on the narrative? Like, were you able to tell a story that you weren't able to before, or is it the same story, just visualized in a new way?
Really, it's the same story visualized in a new way, but actually, if anything, it did throw open a couple of issues that you don't necessarily always visualize as part of the original text, or even in these. It's when you're reading something in text, there is a degree of imagination that lets you fill in some of the blanks, and in these particular contexts, when you actually have to put images in it, you can sometimes discover that there are a few quite interesting blanks that you need to fill in when you're left, because you can see it, you can see everything everywhere that you've been and where it relates to everywhere else. And whereas a text can hand wave some of that away by saying, well, you walk down a corridor, there could have really been anything down the corridor, but now you actually have to stipulate, well, how long was that corridor, How far away was this room before that room? You've got, if the orc hall is a big room full of orcs, then it actually takes, you know, the character longer to get past it to go to the next room. So sometimes you'll end up with logical inconsistencies that can exist in a book that can't exist in real life. So you have to try and marry the two of them together so that you don't end up creating something too confusing.
Right, so I imagine that probably just like with the old Dungeons & Dragons games, you probably busted out your graph paper and sketched exactly how everything would fit together.
Yeah, actually, we have on our wall behind us, we've got a giant whiteboard wall, and we have a drawing of the entire dungeon itself. And it's interesting that you talk about that as well, because we had to do a lot of bits and pieces where we looked at rooms and went, well, we can't have this can't, like, we had to move some rooms around because we ended up saying, well, the dining room is smaller than the antechamber that leads into it, and things like that. Just to try and insert sometimes a little bit of logic, or you'd end up with the kitchen on the complete other side of the map to the dining hall. And so we did do a lot of bits and pieces of trying to merge them together and draw them out. So we do have quite a reasonably detailed map now on our wall of the entire game.
It's now covered in scribbles and all sorts of things as we've been working hard on it over the last few weeks. We've been making notes left, right, and center to get things working.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if that's a whiteboard, it's likely to be erased. I hope you take a photo of it first.
Oh, we will
do. Oh, we will do. Yeah.
I'm not going to let that.
A big part of what we did in the original setup is we took the original map. So a lot of people who'd played the game had drawn their own maps. And there was a semi-official one that I think the community had basically come to the conclusion of. And we sat down and really kind of stretched it and expanded it to fit all of the new stuff that we wanted while trying to keep the what the original was about so that it was basically, we took some of a lot of the original locations and we made extra room between them for more stuff, basically.
We also brought in the very early on in the project the skills of a writer called Jonathan Green, who is a bit of an expert in fighting fantasy. He's actually written a bunch of the later fighting fantasy books. He recently wrote the official history of fighting fantasy called You Are the Hero, and his knowledge was pretty invaluable at that early stage, just to try and make a bit more sense of this crazy mountain that we're about to redesign.
So longtime fans of fighting fantasy in general and the Warlock of Firetop Mountain specifically will find a lot to like and a lot of familiar ground in your adaptation.
Oh yeah, like it's like a love letter to fighting fantasy, really. You know, every change we've made, anything we've added or changed or adjusted, any bit of new content that's being created, new characters we've introduced, everything fits within the lore of the world that the old fans all know. And we're really proud of that. It's been something that we've been very careful to get right. And it's also been a lot of fun, you know, sifting through a lot of the old source books and you know, pulling out obscure characters from strange adventures and placing them in this, you know, back to the forefront of the series again. It's kind of fun.
It's kind of like Disney Infinity or the Lego games, where you're just throwing all these different characters together and letting them interact.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. It's funny you mentioned that. I've been playing a lot of Disney Infinity recently with my kids. they love it.
Well, enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah.
So speaking of the characters, it wasn't just the dungeon you had to now visualize, it was also the inhabitants. And I understand that the playable characters are based on figurines, is that correct?
Yeah, so one of the things that we in the very early days of redesigning this game book, which is essentially just a paperback book, you know, we had to take it into this new video game level. We thought of a number of ways we were going to do this, and ultimately we concluded that creating this kind of pseudo board game approach would work really well, because, you know, game books are essentially solo Dungeons and Dragons games, and people associate tabletop figurines and stuff with that sort of style of gameplay. And then because we were having multiple characters you could choose, it just naturally fell into place that, hey, you're going to have a figurine for each of these characters, and that's going to become your figurine for your adventure. we looked at how we could implement that. And we did that a number of ways. The first way that we did it is we did a deal with a company in the UK called Otherworld Miniatures that actually, create real physical fantasy miniatures. And we got a 3D scanner, and Ed here sat many, many hours and 3D scanned the little miniature figurines in, and then re-sculpted them slightly and then painted them. We also had some other artists build brand new figurines from scratch that sort of matched that old look, even down to the way they painted them. And then what was the other one?
We scanned, we sculpted some in-house, and we outsourced for others.
Yeah, that's right.
We also did variations on the existing ones, so we would take some of the Otherworld miniatures that were nicely sculpted and create a couple of new variations, so that we had to fill a couple of the extra gaps.
If a player of Warlock of Firetop Mountain grows particularly attached to a character, is there an actual figurine that they can purchase?
For the main characters, not, because most of the main characters we had to base on either Fighting Fantasy lore and very few of them have figurines that are specifically have been created for them. Because in a lot of cases, like if, for instance, the Land of Loan character is based on a figurine from a board game that's no longer made. And there's a bunch of different characters in there that are there. But a lot of the monsters in the actual game you'd be able to purchase from Otherworld Miniatures. But yeah, the main characters, unfortunately, not.
And some of the monsters that appeared in the original illustrations of the books, obviously, there's no figurines for those, and we actually got those made bespoke. So the actual miniatures match the illustrations, Russ Nicholson's original illustrations that he did. So yeah, they look really great.
Yeah, I put a huge emphasis on making sure that we replicated the techniques that we used to paint miniatures in real life. So we shied away from using kind of classic textures, and everything was digitally painted, but it was done through digital paint, not through kind of texture application. So I used a literal kind of digital paintbrush to sit there and put down base coats and then layer it up over it layer by layer until we got the kind of that hand painted.
And I understand you'll be adding more player characters too as DLC, is that right?
Yeah, so at the minute there's 12 in there. We've got two packs of DLC planned to come in a few months' time, and then we'll also be adding some freebies in there as well. So people that bought the game will get some new heroes to take on quests.
How many characters are you expecting to have total?
That's a good question. We're definitely looking to probably double the current number, so up into the early 20s, I would say. But sky's the limit. Like if people want more, we'll make more. I mean, and the great thing about these characters is that because they each have a different adventure, we can, add new content into suit that particular character, to the point where we have got early plans of actually, creating new parts of the mountain, which are yet undiscovered, which you'll be able to, go and visit with certain characters. So, but it all depends on how hungry our audience is really for it. We're gonna do what we've got planned, and then we'll see from there, really.
Oh, that's exciting. It hadn't occurred to me that in addition to the statistics and the skills and also the way that they interact with the mountain to cause new storylines, it didn't occur to me that you'd be adding to the mountain itself. That's exciting.
Yeah, and we've also got, some characters at the moment, all the characters, they enter the mountain through the entrance, the bog standard entrance that you always enter the mountain. But for example, we've got a half giant lady adventurer who's very, very cool, and she chooses to enter the mountain in a different way. She actually will come in via a different entrance. So her perception of the mountain and how it's laid out is going to be very different from one of the adventurers that comes in through the standard entrance.
So in addition to all the visuals that you've had to create for this new engine, your previous game engine that was featured on this podcast, when it was used for To Be or Not to Be, had some excellent voice acting, some great audio. Mm. And that was a stretch goal for the Warlock of Firetop Mountain when it was on Kickstarter, but not one that was met. Do you think you'll see voice acting in future applications of this game engine?
Look, we would love to have voice acting in. You know, it would really add to it. And I know some people would prefer it. Again, it comes down to costs for us. We're a small indie team. You know, our resources are always very, very tight. Unfortunately, we didn't meet the Kickstarter goal for that, for the voiceover. So again, it was something we couldn't put in. But again, if the fans are hungry for it and the game goes well, then why not? You know, we'd love it. We would love to just keep adding to it.
Because the previous game, To Be or Not to Be, that was essentially the result of a Kickstarter that Ryan North ran, which earned over $500,000, right?
I know, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really successful.
It's very much a matter of perspective of, you know, he ran one of the most popular publishing Kickstarter projects of all time, which led to it becoming a game as well. His original goal was just to make a choose your own adventure game. And here you are running a Kickstarter for the game itself. The game is the core product. It's not an add-on to somebody else's Kickstarter.
Exactly. And you know, we raised $50,000, which is significantly smaller. And you know, a lot of that money, you know, once you paid your Kickstarter fees and once you paid for the various things you've promised in, you know, backer awards and things, you know, that money goes straight back into actually the hard core development of the game. In our case, we were able to do a lot more art. That was the whole point, is that we wanted to add more miniatures and you know, give ourselves a bit more time just to make it look really great. And that was really, really important. So.
Yeah, and it was a pretty good Kickstarter. You say you raised so much less than To Be or Not to Be, but your original goal was $15,000 Australian, and you raised $54,000. That's great.
Yeah, we were blown away. It was really, really, yeah, amazing. I mean, the whole idea of the Kickstarter, it was just to raise a few more bits of funds just to get some more art done, and subsequently, because we got a little bit more, we were able to get even more art done, which is why the game, I would say it's probably, you know, a third bigger as a result of that. We've been able to really expand on it. And yeah, the colored illustrations, we've got brand new illustrations from Russ Nicholson, the original artist. You know, we were just able to really just add to it in ways that we couldn't have dreamed of doing otherwise.
And all that work to make this game engine, it's not going to be a one shot. You're going to make other games using this engine as well.
Yes, that's the hope. The plan is we'd really like to work on Death Trap Dungeon next, which is another very famous addition to the Fighting Fantasy series. It's probably, arguably, even more famous than the Wall of Firetop Mountain in the sort of like community. Yeah, City of Thieves is another one that gets asked for quite a lot, in Citadel of Chaos. So look, if I had my way, I would make them all. But obviously, there needs to be a demand there. We need to be able to do it cost effectively. So we'll see. So far, so good. Like, you know, we've had a really great response from the game being released. So fingers crossed it will continue to go great.
Yeah, this is actually something I was going to bring up later, which is Death Trap Dungeon is a game that I reviewed when it came out for PS1 in April of 98. And I remember I remember it being terrible.
I can't comment on that.
Very diplomatic. That's probably the best answer you could give. I will say, however, that I hope that Tin Man Games' adaptation of Death Trap Dungeon is an improvement upon my previous experience.
Well, if you enjoy Warlock, when we get onto Death Trap Dungeon, it will be in the same vein, although we already have some plans of how we're going to adapt the game to be a bit different. So, yeah, watch this space.
Oh, good. I have two quick gameplay questions about Warlock. So I grew up playing games like Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest, and I know that when my hit points get too low, I my last ditch effort to survive that encounter is to run away. There doesn't seem to be an option to flee in Warlock, though. What am I supposed to do? Just die?
Absolutely. It's fighting fantasy. That's what happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the classic books, our adaptation of the original books don't really give you much option for being able to flee. They were, fight or die, basically. Unless it's a specific sneaking option, it's something that we put into the text.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the narrative forces you onwards all the time, and that's we've kept that as close to the original as possible. The problem with choose your own adventure narrative is as soon as you even remotely sandbox it, so giving you the option to flee, to go back to the previous room you were in, opens up a whole world of complication. And in fact, what we did, we did actually sandbox this version of Warlock more than the original book. There are areas which you can go back and forth in, and it will adjust for the fact, the narrative will change for the fact that you might have been in that room previously, and there might be things that you did in that room that have subsequently changed. So, but to do that on a whole scale, like have a completely sandbox, choose your own adventure story, it would be, that wouldn't be fun to create.
Or at least very difficult to do it within the confines of what a kind of a game book is about. At that point, you, to some degree, completely drifted away from being a game book at all.
Yeah.
Because, it no longer becomes about the written decisions and the word and descriptions of the room, because all of a sudden everything that you do and create has to become genericized as a consequence of this text that we've written has to work correctly for every time you enter this room. Or you have to create, as Neil was pointing out, it gets exponential how many different variations you have to be able to write of every descriptor. So in order to try and keep it as actually a game book as opposed to something which is more kind of, I guess, sandboxy, we had to keep it fairly constrained.
Well, that's interesting what you said about the narrative constantly driving you forward, because that's another tactic I learned from Dungeons & Dragons that doesn't work here, which is that you slowly make your way deeper into the dungeon and then retreat, heal yourself, go back in, go deeper, go back, heal yourself. And in Warlock of Firetop Mountain, there was very early on, I had a bad encounter with a pair of snakes, and I wanted to just go back to that bench that was right around the corner, and I couldn't.
Did you use a resurrection stone?
Yeah, those seem to be so rare that I've been hesitant to do so.
Now you need to use a resurrection stone. And I'd also advise, when you do find a bench, rest and eat provisions. You get more stamina back that way. And the other thing with these kind of game books as well is that a lot of the unlike other RPGs, a lot of the things about these things that you need to kind of work out where things are and learn some of the best paths to take to acquire certain items, to do certain things, and a little bit of trial and error. What we try and do in the narrative is we try and feed you with clues. If you look at the characters, they have little moments where they think to themselves about things. And sometimes they will give you little clues in there about what you should be doing or where you should be going. So hopefully, it's not too painful.
Okay, I'll have to go back in and give it another go. Last question. On the Kickstarter, you indicated that this game would be coming out in late 2016 for mobile devices, and many other games in your library are available on those platforms. Can we expect to see Warlock on iOS and Android?
So the plan at the moment is when the crew have got back from Seattle, we're going to be probably looking at doing an iOS version of the game. There are some potential obstacles that we're going to need to get around to make that work in the way that we need to. So we've got to look into that. But yeah, we're kind of standing by an iOS version either end of the year, probably more likely early 2017. As for Android, we'll see. Again, Android becomes more complex again because the sheer complication, the sheer amount of devices out there that you have to support. For a small team like us, it can become quite expensive very quickly. So we'll see.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like you have so much in plan for the future. Additional DLC for this game, additional platforms for this game, additional games in this engine like Death Trap Dungeon. I'm really excited to see the future for Tin Man Games. So I appreciate you giving us a little glimpse into the creation of this game and what's in store. Thank you. Just give us one last reminder where to find you and your game online.
Okay, so you can go direct to Steam, do a search for The Warlock of the Firetop Mountain. You will find our game there. We're also available on the Humble Store for your games a bit more DRM-free. You can go to our blog at tinmangames.com.au, and we have another site called gamebookadventures.com, which has a list of all our other games and apps that are available on a whole load of devices.
Excellent, and there will be links to all those in the show notes found at IndieCider.net. Neil and Ed, thank you so much for your time.
No worries, thank you.
Thank you.
This has been IndieCider, a GameBits production. Find more episodes, read our blog, or send feedback at IndieCider.net.